This is the Brisbane Football Review with your host, James Coghlan.
The best ideas come about 20 seconds too late in my experience. Scott Owen.
There's a mute button, people, don't worry.
And Adam Pace.
Well, look, I'm going to feel like that, you know, I'm the one who shot Barbie's mother.
Starting now.
Well, it's shaping up to be a wet and miserable Easter, but the good news is we've got another episode of the Brisbane Football Review to cheer you up over the next 45 minutes to an hour. Hello, everyone. It is James, Scott and Adam with you on this Wednesday afternoon. We're delaying our recording a little bit to make room for the Socceroos because, well, quite frankly, otherwise we would have been struggling for filler topics. So the good news is we've got a bit to cover. Adam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys going?
I am so ready for a holiday, but that's a whole different story. I will also apologise for my abrupt exit last week, but I can assure you that whatever the excuse Scott gave, it was actually probably true.
I was very, very generous with my excuse. I just said you ran off to join the circus, and I think that's absolutely accurate. I'm very much looking forward to the Easter break. Just one more day to go, and it feels like it always rains this time of year, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does feel like it rains that time of year. But, you know, I suppose good excuse to stay inside and eat some chocolate, I guess.
I don't need an excuse for that.
And the good thing is, it's other than the A-League, it's a free weekend from local football as well. So happy Easter to everyone playing from NPL, FQPL and everyone involved.
Yeah, actually, that's right, because I've had a few Easter weekends where there's been games on Thursday and Sunday as well. Actually, I think it was 2 years ago, Easter Thursday, I wound up having the regional Australia Cup qualifier and then the weekend off, which is actually quite a fortuitous bit of scheduling, all things considered. Anyway, that's just a random story time with James. What do you say we get right into the A-League Women's Recap? Because there was a Raw team in action during the men's international break, and well, the good news is the Raw got 3 points at Perry Park with a 2-0 win over Perth Glory. It was a win over Perth that we've been hoping to see for quite a while, but it hasn't always been coming at Perry Park, has it, Scott?
No, it hasn't, and the Raw did play on the weekend, and they played very well in that game against Perth. 2-0 winners over Perth Glory in a game by that point, both sides were officially eliminated from the finals race, so not a lot to play for either side, but it seemed like right from the beginning, Brisbane were up for the game, and in terms of it seems like they really want to finish the season on a positive note, on the upswing, and 2 wins out of their last 3 games, potentially another one at the weekend at home. They are finishing quite strongly. It's just that the middle of the season has seen them miss the finals. But on this particular game, when they got 1-0 up and then 2-0 up in the game, they were never really headed by a Perth side who didn't really seem like they were up for the fight on the day. They put in some effort and they had a couple of chances at nil all and won, but went nil. But when the second goal went in, it was all over, and Brisbane controlled the game quite nicely and thoroughly deserved the win.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of complaints about that, but I suppose it is the same story that we've had for the last few seasons with the Raw, where they finally get their wins, but it's too little too late, Adam.
It is back-to-back wins, and a first win in 5 meetings against Perth Glory, and I know a couple of those losses have been proven in the past to be very, very costly as far as the bigger picture, but this is probably their most complete performance of the season. Even those 2 wins early on in the season was the last time they went back-to-back games. You could tell that they were probably a bit fortuitous. The win over Melbourne Victory on opening weekend, I think that was a stroke of luck, and they were there at the right time. And then the Sydney game was a tight game, other than Chelsea Blissett's goal. So this is a little bit more, I think, controlled, and I think the game management side of it as well. But then again, this is a Perth Glory side that's hasn't won in 9 games, or they have not won in the calendar year of 2024.
Yeah, and I want to stick to the positives as well. And Kaya Stevenson, I think, might have won the goal of the season for the Raw with that deft little chip, Scott.
One of the better goals of the season, no doubt about that. And in the A-League Women's broadly, it was a delightful little chip from Kaya Stevenson over the goalkeeper. And that goal had been coming as well. Brisbane did have a couple of chances just before that. But the through ball for Kaya there for that, and then the composure for the chip over the top was really, really well done. And she's had a good year, Kaia Stevenson, hasn't she, in terms of she's really nailed down her place in this team this year. At the start of the year, it was a case of where does she fit in the starting lineup? Well, this year, she's certainly proven she can play in those attacking midfield areas and add a lot to the teams. And it was a good finish, no doubt about that.
Well, that's the interesting thing as well. It seems like she's sort of been able to capitalise on a bit of misfortune from Grace Kuilamu, because it seems like those two were sort of battling for that same spot, and the unfortunate injury to Kuilamu opened up the opportunity for Stevenson, and to her credit...
Also Marielle Hecker's injured start to the season.
Yeah, exactly, but you got to give Stevenson credit. That's the exact sort of mentality you want from a young professional player, where they say, all right, my turn to take over, let's go take full control and make sure that I'm not giving up my starting spot.
Well, I think it just shows just the way this goal was scored just shows where the where Kaia's at as far as her confidence goes. Getting one-on-one with probably the best keeper in the league at the moment, Morgan Aquino. That's right, Aquino.
Okay, leave it alone.
That, just a bit of a bugbear from the commentary team. But anyway, I digress.
Former world goalkeeper as well.
Yeah, and you thought that Kaia getting one-on-one after being pretty much gifted the chance from a ramp back pass, she could have tried to go around either side and try and take, but to actually chip her, it just shows how confident she's playing. And yeah, I think it's probably a racing too about who has been as far as the sort of, I guess, the rising stars of this side. And to think that, you know, that 12 months ago that she was playing in FQPL 1 women's, to be pretty much a, you know, a must pick in A-League women's in the space of a year, it just is a credit. A player that we've known for a while, it was going to be very, very good.
Yeah, and, well, let's be honest, she was playing FQPL opposition, but it was in an NPL quality team. yeah, and it is also the other half of that Brisbane City brigade, Sian Fryer, who doubled the advantage as well. And again, it's those players that have really come to the fore this season and been huge contributors for... Okay, it hasn't quite been the successful season that we were hoping for from the Roar. I don't think any of us were expecting them to be title contenders, but we were hoping they'd push into finals. But Sian Fryer, I thought, was, again, capping off what has been a pretty successful season, playing that sort of hybrid left-wing, left-back role.
Yeah, she's played two different roles, hasn't she, in terms of starting off the year as a left-winger and now that left-wing-back role. But, again, both Kaia and Sian haven't got the goals this season that their performances have kind of warranted in terms of the play they've produced hasn't quite been there with the goals at the back end. So it was great to see both of them get on the score sheet and get that reward for the effort and endeavour they've put in this year, because they have been two of the Roar's better players this season. And that goal for Sian Fryer was really well taken, wasn't it? Finish into the bottom corner. Again, a good ball, quick ball forward, and a very good finish from the edge of the area to make it 2-0. And again, we said on the show before that Sian's played really, really well this year, but the goals just haven't been there for her. So to see her get a couple of goals at the back end of the season has been really pleasing.
Exactly. And that ball from McCormick to tee her up as well, that was something I was happy to go and watch on the social media highlight clips more than once, because that's something I remember as far back as McCormick's first stint with the Roar, where she had that range of passing that really served her well, and hasn't quite come out as much this season, but when it has, it's been quite a valuable asset. Well, at least I think so, anyway. Sorry, I should have teed one of you guys up for that.
Yeah, I was going to say that that it has. I think the emphasis has been a lot more on defence with that midfield for Jen McCormick, but she does possess that long ball. But at the end of the day, you also need to have the players be running onto it rather than trying to sort of pass and hold up. And that's what you get with, especially with Sian Fryer on that left wing, when she's sort of on attacking duty, she will always be going forward and try and get in behind. And she was able to get in behind Tash Rigby, a very, very experienced defender. And then basically, again, one-on-one with Morgan Aquino and put it past her near post. So it was a well-taken goal. And And yeah, it's only going to be goal number three of the season for Sharon Fryer. It does seem almost criminal, but she has assisted in a lot of ways, well, that whole goals contribution stat. But I think going forward next season, if she can really start, you know, double, maybe triple that tally, she could be one of the league's best, if she's not already in that same breath as far as being, you know, in that sort of that merit A-League women's player of the year, or even an all-star selection, which is something that's coming up.
I don't think she's quite there yet. I think she's definitely in that batch of promising young players who have shown the capability to go to the next level. But I feel like there's still plenty of room for her to progress as a player. But you're right, though. Like, the growth that they've shown this season, those two young players, has probably been first and foremost the main positives I can take out of the season. Now, is this a full press conference you've got from Alex Smith?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear what...
I was in your role on Saturday afternoon.
All right, well, Adam...
Better you than me.
you were nice enough to run the press conference and ask all the important questions. So let's hear what the coach of the Brisbane Roar Women had to say, Alex Smith.
Al, 2-0 was up today over Perth Glory. What's your general thoughts on the game?
I thought it was a fantastic game of football. I thought we controlled the game from start to finish, similar to when we played them away in Perth. But this time we were able to take a few of our chances. Another day could have been 3, 4, 5. So I'm really, really pleased. Girls are starting to really kind of buy into the style. And it's a shame that it's happening so late in the season. But yeah, really pleased with Kyan and Sean. Couple of young Queensland talents getting on the score sheet, so it's fantastic for us.
After last week playing in very hot and heavy conditions, is it a welcome change to actually playing, so at least in colder conditions and a bit of rain around?
Yeah, it was beautiful. 25 degrees, bit of moisture on the pitch. I was actually jealous that I wasn't still out there playing, so really, really nice, cool change, and really, really happy with 3 points.
Back-to-back wins for the first time since the opening rounds of the season. Obviously, it's an important step for the team with nothing to play for, but still something to play for as far as personal pride and pride for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when points are up for grabs, you know, you've got no excuse but to try as hard as you can. So I thought we were really fantastic in that aspect of the thing. Yeah, just trying to end, you know, as high up as we can on the ladder, and you know, take that momentum into the off season and next year, obviously, as well.
Do you feel this is probably the most sort of complete performance from the side this season?
Yeah, absolutely. Last time we played Perth was probably close, but obviously we were able to get on the score sheet today, so definitely all around performance. I feel like the girls are really starting to, as I said, kind of buy into the style of play fully and understand exactly what needs to be done and the way that we need to play. So it's just a shame that it's kind of happened so late in the season.
You mentioned young Queensland talent. You obviously have to be impressed with the performances of Kai Stevenson and Sean Fryer.
Yeah, they've been, you know, since I came in, I've known them for a long time. You know, obviously Brisbane, playing around Brisbane. Thought Tish Woods had another fantastic game as well. So, yeah, there's some really good signs, you know, some real good potential from a lot of these girls who are young and up and coming and local Queenslanders. So it's fantastic for us as a club, and that's kind of what we want to progress to in the future.
And defensively, a clean sheet for Kelly Richards and the defence. Obviously, with Keely coming in late in the season, replacing Jordan, how's she sort of been going as far as, you know, taking that number one shirt and her outlook for the rest of the season?
Yeah, Keels has been fantastic since I came in. You know, she's probably a number one keeper somewhere else. It's just, you know, just the, I guess, the goalkeeping world where if you get a low knee from the States, then, you know, you've got to play number two. But she's had a great attitude. She's trained really, really hard, trains really well. So really happy with her performance as well. And again, another win for her, which is fantastic.
And finally, Canberra next Saturday. I'm assuming that you want to go out this side with a bang and finish off the season strong, make it 3 straight wins.
Yeah, absolutely. I think last time we played there and we played them away and it didn't end too well for us, so I think there'll be a lot of motivation for the girls to make sure that doesn't happen again and definitely finish with 3 points.
So for the second last time this season, Alex Smith talking after the match. The Roar have their final home game against Canberra United, who are in action as we're recording against Sydney FC. That is going to be, by the sounds of it, a dead rubber, although, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later on, we hope it is not the final time that we see Canberra United in the A-League Women's competition. Final point for the Raw Perth game, though, are the 3-2-1s. And reading the run sheet, I'm glad you guys wrote down who I voted for, because otherwise I would have been frantically scrambling back through our chat.
That's the service we provide.
The 3-2-1...
Not a free one, though, so pay up.
My presence is payment enough. 3 points for Deborah Ann Della Harp, 2 for Kaya Stevenson, and 1 for Jenna McCormick. I did mention this before we started recording, but I do want to point this out on air as well. I will say that with the Player of the Year votes, based on what we've seen so far, I think if Della Harp had been around all season, she probably would have been running away with that Player of the Year vote, because like that was a phenomenal piece of mid-season recruitment from the Raw staff.
She's been a fantastic addition, hasn't she, what Deborah and Della Harp has brought to the site team on that right-hand side, a position where after Chelsea Plissett went down, there was a few players tried and nothing really worked, and DA's come in and done very, very well, and we will announce the winner of the Brisbane Football Review's A-League Women's Player of the Year on the show next week. Oh, will actually be announced on our socials over the weekend at full time of the final game of the season, but we'll also talk about it on the show next week.
For sure.
I was just going to add to that, that it'll be interesting to see whether Deborah Ann does come back, because her and potentially retain Chelsea Blissett as your two full backs, it does really, really open up, you know, the chances. And also, as well, it allows a player like Sian Fryer to actually go forward and actually play as a winger, as she's probably more accustomed to, rather than that hybrid role. Not that she hasn't been doing a bad job, but it's concentrating an attacker. That's where I spoke about those goals are going to come from, where she's allowed to just attack. So I think it's an important one. But yeah, her and Tish Woods, especially, two mid-season recruits, I think have been excellent this season.
For sure. I will also say, Adam, thank you for bailing me out in the middle of that sentence, because I was trying to make some clever remark that I didn't actually know where it was going. So save me from looking like a fool.
Not the first time, but
all right. Now, the reason we are recording on the Wednesday is because the Socceroos were in action last night. Double header against Lebanon either side of last weekend. It was a 2-0 win in Sydney first up, and then a surprisingly convincing 5-0 result last night. And overall thoughts on the performance? I'm honestly a little bit surprised that second game was the blowout that it was, because the way Lebanon came out in that first game in Sydney, I kind of thought it was all headed towards a frustrating 1-1 draw, Adam.
It was. And it wasn't the case that Lebanon were that bad last night. I just think that the Socceroos took their opportunities. They played a more direct style. Craig Goodwin coming back into the team really made a difference. He had one of his better games. He's had a couple of stinkers in this qualifier so far, where he's sort of forgotten how to sort of cross a ball, or at least, you know, get the distance and range that we're accustomed to. But he had a really, really good game. And he probably was the difference of why that game blew out. 2 goals, an assist, and also as well debut goals for Cassini Yenge and John Iredale, in the middle of that, also a own goal from Basel Girardi.
To be honest, like, I was a little annoyed when Harry Suter hit the post early on, because I think it was still 1-0 at that point, and I was thinking, geez, that feels like the sort of thing we're going to come back and go. That hurt a little bit more, but it was good to see them actually breaking Lebanon down as well, because that's been one of the big criticisms of Graham Arnold set up sides, where they just haven't had that nous to really break a team down. But that goal from Goodwin was something special, Scott.
It was a very good finish from Craig Goodwin, and he's been the Socceroos' best player for the last couple of years, really, hasn't he? When he fires, the Socceroos look at their best, and they looked at their best last night, unsurprisingly, with his performance. But the first game, I thought they were actually almost lucky to get out of that with a win. By the end of that, how many chances did Lebanon have? They had the more shots in the game. They hit the post a couple of times. It was quite unfortunate from their perspective. They weren't able to get at least something in terms of on the score sheet out of that game. Second game, I thought it was very well controlled, actually. And I'm not surprised it was better the second go around, because they had 90 minutes of tape on Lebanon. They could really break down. This is what they tried to do to us, and this is how we can go about breaking them down and making the most of that. So I'm not surprised that they were better off the second time around, the Socceroos, and they were very, very good in Canberra last night. Good to see them actually really put a team to the sword, because they haven't really done that for a while, which was good to see. I really liked John Iredale off the bench, actually. He added a lot to the team when he came on. He's in terms of Arnie Ball, you know there's always going to be a target man up front, and he kind of fits that bill, but he's also got a bit more to his game than that. He added quite a bit to the front third, and I thought his energy was quite impressive and might be... So they're clearly looking for strikers at the moment, James, the Socceroos, in terms of trying to find players who can work with or in place of Mitch Duke, and he might be a potential solution there. He was quite impressive.
Call me crazy, but I feel like Mitch Duke isn't the sort of striker that you can necessarily rely on going towards USA in 2026. I think he had his moment in Qatar. It was a great header in that second game, but I honestly feel like now is the time to try and find that line-leading striker, where you've got someone not just for USA, but for the however many countries are hosting 2030 as well.
It's Mitch Duke's an interesting one, because I think that he still has, at least for the foreseeable future, in through to round three and potentially even onto the USA. But he's more of a horses for courses sort of striker. He's a player that you can hold up and bring the wingers in against probably a better team who are more defensively structured, as we saw over in Qatar for the World Cup. But for these qualifiers against sort of the lesser light teams who are just going to play an incessant low block, you need creative strikers. And I think, you know, Ayengi, Iredale, you know, a couple of others, maybe there might be a couple of players that come out of the Oli Roos that may feature going into, you know, into sort of the round three and hopefully it should be onto North America in 26. So I don't think you want to have both a Mitch Duke and a Bruno Fornaroli in the same squad. I think it's going to be one or the other. But certainly he has a place, but I think in certain circumstances, but playing against, you know, especially his Middle Eastern teams, you need that more, that dynamism. And also as well, it was good to see Aiden Rustic back as well, even though one of his shots has still entered orbit above Parliament House.
That one might land sooner rather than later, but at the other end of the field, it's actually also really pleasing see four games in this World Cup qualifying campaign, zero goals conceded. It kind of goes back to the Pim Verbeek era, the late, great Pim Verbeek, when he was coaching the Socceroos. They conceded one goal in the final round of World Cup qualifying, and that was against Japan in the final game when they'd already qualified in Melbourne. So that goes back to that. If you can keep clean sheets, you're going to go a long way towards getting yourself through qualification. And that back line is also looking quite solid, and that is even with someone like a Harry Suter, who has played, what, two games in the whole season or something for Leicester City. He doesn't play for them, so
he's played more games for Australia in the last 9 months or whatever than he has for
five days than he has played basically more games in the last 5 days than he has for Leicester all year, or minutes anyway. So even despite that back line is looking very, very solid. The only thing I would say is I'm not sure about Kai Rolls as a left back. I think you might want to move him back into the centre and have a bit more speed in the wide areas, because when you get to the World Cup, assuming they get there, James, and if you go up against someone like a France again and you've got Mbappe on the wing, he's just not going to be quick enough to be able to deal with that threat. So you do need to have some more ball, more pace on the flank defensively. But at the moment, it's working quite effectively, having that those four big bodies at the back and just bullying teams in Asia.
For sure. And now you've got two games where they've already qualified. It sounds like they're going to have a bit of room to experiment against Palestine and Lebanon before
Bangladesh away, Palestine at home in Perth.
Oh, I can't read. Never mind me. But yeah, either way, they've got two more games to go. They've already qualified. I did see a quote from Arnold that said it sounds like he wants to secure rankings points as well. So it's not going to be a full-blown squad overhaul, but it'll be enough to keep them competitive and hopefully bring in a couple of new players as well.
Australia ranked 23 in the latest world rankings as well. So I think it's important that even though they you know got games at hand and they're through, I still think two wins and basically a full 18 points I think is still a must. Yeah. And it'd be nice if also as well that they can keep that zero in the goals conceded column as well. But yeah, I there is probably room to experiment. I think there's a few areas that still need a bit of stability. I think right back especially. But yeah, I still think they shouldn't just discount them and send you know a sub strength team to Bangladesh. That even though they should absolutely smack them. Going to Dakar, again, it's going to be one of these situations, Asia, where the trip may be more of a challenge than the team they actually face on the pitch.
And yeah, James, it's also about the AFC rankings in terms of you want to be in the top two or three seeds to get to try and avoid some of the other top team. Top three will be is so you don't want to be fourth, because otherwise then you're going to play one of the top three teams in your group. Now, it shouldn't matter given how many teams go through in each group. But ideally, you don't want to be facing any of those teams if you can avoid it. So two wins in these final games gives them the maximum points they can get for their ranking in Asia. And I don't know where they stand, first, second, third, fourth, or what. But hopefully, they're not in the top three and they can avoid that when the draw for the next round is done, whenever that's done.
As it stands, because this is a different World Cup qualification setup than it has been for the last few tournaments because you've got 48 teams. Advancing to the
8.5 spots, I do believe.
Yes, so the way it works now, Australia's already qualified for the third phase of AFC of the AFC tournament. From here, 18 teams will play in the third round in three groups of six. The top two teams from each group will advance to the World Cup automatically, and the third and fourth place finishers in each group will move on to the fourth round. I vote that Australia just decides to keep this nice and simple and say, let's just do this the simple way rather than having to do a three-team round robin.
We've done it the hard way the last two times. It's someone else's turn.
Yeah. So, yeah, six teams will go through to the World Cup from the third round. Two more teams will advance from the fourth round. And then the fifth round will be a inter-confederation playoff there's a really really long way you can go about it.
But surely you rank the top six teams in Asia in no particular order, there being Japan, Iran, Australia, Saudi Arabia, Korea, and I'd say
Qatar.
Probably
it'd
Qatar.
Be Qatar.
Look, if you're losing to a team other than those combinations. Look, we're in more trouble than we thought. I think that Australia definitely top. Maybe Saudi Arabia might be the only sort of fly in the ointment as far as that. And knowing the soccer is, I could probably draw them and Iran, even though we've avoided Iran since 1997, lest we forget. But it is a case that even though that we'll most likely play one of those teams.
Again. We always seem to get Japan. I'm going to try and talk it out of existence. We'll get Japan again.
Well, we seem to be playing a lot against South Korea, and we'll touch on that shortly. But we seem to be playing them a lot lately, so maybe one more round, a couple more rounds with them.
Well, as it stands, these are the teams that are qualified for the third stage of the tournament. Qatar, Iran, Uzbekistan, Iraq, UAE, and Australia. So how they fit into the thing, that's a problem for later shows, because I want to keep this show moving, and we'll mention that the Raw did feature a player in international action, not for Australia. Jack Hingett made his debut for Sri Lanka in the FIFA series or something.
FIFA series.
Yeah. So, big congratulations to Jack. I would have loved to have seen him play for the Socceroos, but he got the chance to play international football, and that's something that you can't really begrudge anybody.
No, it's not. I mean, it's a great opportunity for Jack. I think he's said he's going to play for Sri Lanka for a year or so now, so it's great to see him finally get over there and participate in some games for them. A nil-all draw against Warren Moon's Papua New Guinea, and then a 2-0 win over Bhutan yesterday. So, great experience for him to be involved in international football, a chance to go and play in parts of the world, James, where you don't necessarily think, when you think Sri Lanka, you don't think football necessarily, you think cricket, but great to see him over there playing for them, and who knows, it could be the start of something that leads to an Asian Cup participation maybe in the future. Who knows? You never know. I mean, I think there is a way for some of the lesser Asian nations to qualify for the Asian Cup, so maybe you could see something like that happen for Jack in his career. You never know.
You really do hope so, and I think it's good to see him doing that as well. Hopefully he's not too fatigued when he gets back for the Roar this weekend, but especially with another international trip on the cards this weekend. But yeah, I actually like the story of what Sri Lanka are doing as well to try and improve their footballing program. It sounds like they've cast a very, very, very wide net, unlike Australia, who just seemed to cast theirs towards Scotland, to find players with...
Or Sydney.
to find players that had some sort of eligibility to play for them, and it seems like it's worked out really well. So, you know, more power to them.
I'll make a more broader statement that maybe we won't see it now, but maybe in 10, 15, maybe 20 years' time, the next generation. We saw this also with Lebanon last night, that there were, in that Lebanon squad, there are four Australian-born players in that squad. And I think what's happening now, that I think the best way sometimes that international football has become prevalent is that whether they start calling up players that have got exposure to more developed nations. Like for example, you know, a Jack Hinge playing in Australia, he probably will be, and you know, with absolute objectivity, because you know we're friends with Jack, you know, he'd probably be one of the best players in that Sri Lankan team. But it's going to be players that come along like that. Now, I think those bottom nations, I think, are going to, you know, develop a lot quicker, being exposed to players that are playing in more developed nations. Especially we see it in Africa as well, that where it's always been a case of, you know, the best and brightest get shipped off to Europe. But there's more of a run now where those that are not successful, they are coming back and playing. So it's going to be a long time before we see, you know, Sri Lanka's not going to win a World Cup in the next, you know, ever. But I think at least their standard will improve. And with the standard improving, that's where football internationally is going to be at its healthiest.
Well, on that as well, you just look at the fact that, like, it's weirdly enough kind of like how I feel A-League teams should be developing as well, is bringing in those experienced players to sort of work with the developmental prospects. So you bring in someone like Hingett, who's got, what, almost 300 A-League appearances under his belt by this stage, as I get confirmation from Scott. But someone like Hingett, who's got that level of experience, you know, he can come in and help direct traffic, maybe give some of these younger Sri Lankan players a little bit of advice on being a professional footballer. Because he's 33, give or take, now? And he's got that experience that is probably going to be more beneficial than anything else, and that leadership on the pitch as well.
Yeah, he does certainly have that experience, and that is certainly something that all international teams need. The other thing that every national team is doing at the moment is they are scouring the globe far and wide to find players who have any link to that country through a parent, a grandparent, whatever it might be, and they are trying to bring in players to prop up the national team who have ties to the area. You look at some of the, I think a graphic went out over the last weekend, there were a number of players who went off from the A-Leagues to different parts of the world who are players who you would in the A-League are qualified as Australian, but they have dual nationalities and are going and playing for countries all over the world. Jack Hingett's just one of them, and it's something that every country is doing now. It's something that Australia benefited from quite a lot. As you mentioned, they've gone to places like Scotland and found players with ties to Australia, places in Croatia, players from Croatia who have ties to Australia as well. So every country is doing this. So it's not just trying to find experience change, it's trying to cast it as far and wide as you can to find the maximum pool of talent you can.
Well, you consider what minnows like Italy are doing as they try to end their World Cup absence, picking up players from World Cup regulars like Australia.
I was watching you. I knew you had something coming. I wasn't sure what it was going to be, but that's a nice bit of help there. For the Italians will really benefit with Valparto when they're under 21s, won't they?
Definitely will. And the truth is never mean. Let's keep going with the international news as well, because from a Raw perspective, Tommy Waddingham has been with the Oli Roos, who finished runners-up at the WAFF Under-23 Championships, And I get the feeling Australia and South Korea will not be invited back to that tournament after those two contested the final, which South Korea won on penalties.
No, probably not, but a great experience for the Australian under-23 side there ahead of a really important tournament in a couple of months' time in the Olympic qualification, where they need to do work very well to get to Paris. And from the Brisbane perspective, Tommy Waddingham was there in the squad. He got a little bit of a run out, but didn't feature in the game overnight against Korea. But great experience for him as he makes his first step up to this level of international football. You've got to remember, it wasn't so long ago he was heading off with the under-17s team, and now he's been called up to the under-23s. So it's a big jump for him, and I'm sure he would have learned a lot in that period of time under Tony Vidmar.
Well, yeah, and I'm assuming he got called up more so for the learning experience rather than actually competing, because he's only, what, 17, 18 at the moment now? So.
And they gave him squad number 26, so that kind of tells you he was there for development reasons.
But that means he's probably going to be a part of that setup, assuming his development continues on the trajectory it's on, or near that trajectory. So it's clearly there as a case of he might be leading the line for the Oli Roos for the next couple of years.
I was going to say that it's if he keeps his form and sort of keeps his trajectory, you can definitely see him taking more of a prominent role on the road to Los Angeles in 28. But again, it was a good experience, and there is talk of him, you know, being a future Socceroo. And at the end of the day, all this exposure at this level is great for the Roar as well, and great for, more importantly, for Edgehill United up in Cairns.
And I would also point out as well, it's great to see him going off with the Oli Roos, but I really do hope that this isn't going to be the sort of thing that forces the acceleration of his club career at a rate that might not be beneficial for him. And I say this somewhat selfishly, hoping he stays in Brisbane and plays here for another couple of years before making the move overseas as well. Because, again, like, you look at, was it Alu Kuol from the Mariners? Went overseas really young, didn't quite work out. That's some of the concerns we've got with Garan Kuol as well. And I think we're going to be having this conversation about Nestori Irinkunda in the coming years as well, where maybe it's all right to stay in the A-League, get 100 caps before your 23rd birthday, and then look to move overseas.
That's the Brett Edmonton example, isn't it? He did that for Sydney United back in the day, and I think there's a famous story that Sir Alec Ferguson tried to sign him from Sydney United to Manchester United back in the day, or Sydney Olympics, sorry, to Man United back in the day, and he said, no, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to play, and I'm going to develop here, and it worked out wonderfully for him. He went from there to Feyenoord, on to Blackburn, and we know what he did internationally and in the Premier League. So there is merit to what you're saying, James. It's very important for young players at this age to play games, and not necessarily play junior games and practice games and under-23s games, but senior football. It's really important for them to play at that level. You look at even some of the young players who come into the Raw side in the A-League. When do they look best? They don't look best coming out of the National Youth League. It's when they play in the NPL against men in senior competition and play well there and build confidence. Then they step up to the A-League. So competitive senior football is the most important thing, and if he does make a move at some point in the future, whatever it might be, hopefully it's to play senior football somewhere.
I was going to say another example, that the one that sticks out for me as well, is Mark Viduka from Melbourne Knights, the Hudrick split to Celtic to Middlesbrough, and then onto Leeds, and that's sort of the path of the past, you know. The point being is that now you want to see these players, at least as James says, as an example, 100 A-League appearances almost. What's that? That's, you know, 3 seasons worth. Especially a young player. You know, that's three full seasons as a professional in the league. 22, 23 is probably not the worst time then to go off overseas. So it's a case of, in one part, you want to hope that, you know, these players who are also seen as well, you've got to remember these days with the market now, and now that Australian football is starting to really get on in tune with the fact that there is a market as far as player transfers and that economy. Central Coast Mariners have shown how beautifully navigated. Adelaide United are probably the other one. So the other thing is that you don't want clubs going off too soon and saying, oh, this player's at the peak of his powers as far as a young under-20s player. Let's sell them off now.
For sure. Let's keep the news rolling in terms of national teams and give a quick congratulations to Quinn McNichol and Reece Williams from the Raw, plus David Belonghi from Gold Coast Knights, who have been called into the under 17 squad for a camp. So that is news that came out earlier today. And look, given the hype around Quinn McNichol, I think it's not really surprising considering he's the Raw's youngest ever A-League men's goal scorer. Well, youngest men's goal scorer, not in the A-League.
Youngest scorer for the men's team, yeah, but not in the A-League.
Yeah, there we go.
Australian Cup all time, and that under-17s camp, they're off to the RAS's European outpost in Varese, Italy. They'll take on Switzerland under-16s on April 11, and Inter Milan under-17s on the 17th of April. So I dare say that both Quinn McNichol and Reece Williams will be missing a fair chunk of the NPL season down here. But look, you would not want them any other place rather than because that development now, and the reason why Brad Maloney has called up these players, as well as now, thanks to FIFA, now having annual under-17s, World Cups. It hastens the need to have these players in camp and getting familiarised rather than the once in every 2 years or once every 4 year cycles.
For sure. Now, in case you haven't picked up what I'm trying to do so far, is I'm going from a national level to a local focus with the order of the news selections.
Right, let's get through some of these. There's still a fair bit to get through.
Yeah. Yes, well, we've got Ernie Sunderland signed to the A-League Women's Squad as a scholarship keeper for the final 2 weeks of the season. Bit of a learning experience for the Brisbane City keeper from last season.
Virginia United keeper now.
Yep, there we go. And from the A-League men's squad, Joe Coletti is out for the season with an ankle injury from memory in the release.
Yeah, it was announced last week, James, that when they put this injury report out in the squad for the A-League women's game at the weekend, they added that Joe Coletti is out for the year with ankle ligament. I think he's getting some surgery done on that, so he's going to miss the remainder of the season, which opens up an opportunity for somebody to take up a spot in that midfield where there will now be a spot thanks to Joe Coletti not being available. And we wish him the best in his recovery.
For sure. I'm guessing we'll be seeing him back for next pre-season as well. All right. Brief touch on the Olympics plan because the stadium debate is still going. All I'm going to say on this is, talk to me in October because I feel like a lot is going to change between now and then.
Oh, it will change by October. There's no doubt about that. But if this is the plan that they're going to go with, and both sides have said that it is, there's going to be, $1 billion spent on Suncorp and the GABA, and then $1.7 billion spent on CUSAC. Well, this whole Olympics is about legacy, right? They're going to want someone to fill CUSAC. It's going to be a 20,000-seat stadium post-Olympics. Broncos won't go there. Reds will go back to Ballymore before they go to CUSAC. Dolphins certainly won't head south of the river. The Lions looked at it 2 years ago and said it's too narrow. Only leaves one option, right?
Yep. Football.
And if you're looking at it, everyone wants it to be Perry Park and within 5Ks of the city, and this is just over double that away from the CBD, but it sounds like there's a plan, if this goes ahead, for an increase and improvement to the public transportation out to CUSAC. If it's going to be a 20,000-seat rectangular sort of a stadium, it could be the only option you have for a potential home of football. And if I was involved in running the game, I would have already flagged it, said, hey, if you're going to do that, let us know, because that would be ideal for us. You think 13 to 15 A-League men's games there for the Raw. Again, 13 to 15 A-League women's games there. FQ play finals and Queensland Cup games there. Maybe a second A-League team comes in. It becomes like Amy Park in Melbourne. It hosts two different teams. I don't see why it can't work. The only thing I will say is football fans will have to accept it's going to have a running track around it, because that's not going anywhere. They're going to have to keep that because obviously it's going to be the home of Queensland Athletics long term as well, and they do have an annual event where I think it's the Australian Championships held at CUSAC, and that will continue. But I think that's the only minor impediment, and plenty of football grounds have an athletics track around them, James, all around the world. So I can't see why it can't
work.
Two World
Cup finals venues have had athletics tracks around them. So I hope no one gives you this crap about, oh, you can't, it must be rectangular. That's crap. But you make of it what you can. And I agree with Scott. This is probably, as far as long term, the only real viable Olympic legacy solution for football. Like there is 9 years or 8 years between now and then to figure out intermediate home, but that might be a long term solution. But again, we can't get fixated as football fans and go, oh, we don't want it because there's a running track around it, or oh, it's 5 kilometers too far outside the city. It's like I said, at one point you just got to take what you're given. You can't just, you know, expect everything hand fed. And, you know, like I said, the whole thing is this proposed Victoria Park Stadium that has been scotched now is that football's never going to get anywhere near it. Not our problem.
Or if it's good enough for West Ham, James, it can be good enough in the A-League.
Yep, that's it. And to be frank, like, I know, yeah, Perry Park was the Goldilocks solution for football, but I think there would be some, like, by and large, there would be a begrudging acceptance of Cusack really isn't, well, the redeveloped Cusack isn't going to be that bad as it currently stands. Like, we remember how bad it was for that Asian Champions League qualifier, but it's not going to be that. And look, with upgrade
on and off the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
The only reason this is an option is because it's going to get, according to the plans, a $1.7 billion renovation to bring it up to Olympic standard, which is going to make it an elite stadium. It's not going to be what it is now.
For sure. And that's where I'm going to also say as well, like, it's not the first choice. It's probably not even the second choice. But in terms of an overall compromise, it's an option. And it's one that I think is going to have to be, it's going to have to be in that region where you go, well, look, it's not what we wanted, but it's still a pretty solid solution as well, especially if you're getting a venue that for the sport is having up to 100 days of usage out of it, especially when you're going to also potentially open up the ability to host things like World Cup qualifiers in this second round, where it's not a big enough draw to sell out Suncorp Stadium, but it is going to be enough to pack out 14,000-15,000 at the redeveloped Cusack.
Just say, one point you made about Perry Park as being the Goldilocks solution, I still don't think we abandon hope on that.
Not at all.
I think that at least for the next 8 years, or even, you know, sort of by the time 6 years, it still can be a sort of a stepping stone. And even afterwards, you know, it still can be there. It's just, like I said, you can have two grounds, you know, as football specific venues. You can have more than that. You know, there's no.
The participation justifies it.
Yeah.
It'll always be the spiritual home of Queensland football, Perry Park, but maybe Cusack might be where the games are played, the big events in the future, if something like that was to pan out. As you said right off the top, James, it's a very good chance the plans will change and Cusack won't get any sort of renovation. But at the moment, that sounds like where they're going with it.
And to be quite blunt as well, you're also going to need homes for these clubs as well. The Raw, you know, they're still that same sort of team that operates out of all these different venues, but they're, you know, they've got their offices at Milton, they've got the training out at Meakin Park at the moment. This could be the opportunity for the Raw and a potential second A-League franchise to have a home. Football Queensland could eventually take up space there. There's more than enough room and facilities out there for it to become a home of football as well as athletics. And I don't know.
Graham Arnold wants a home for the Socceroos. You could even do that there as well.
Bingo. Yeah. All right. Let's keep it moving. And I want to roll the A-League men's preview into the second question you put in the run sheet and say this Sunday morning. That's right. Sunday morning football. It doesn't quite have the same ring with a Carrie Underwood introduction like Sunday night football. But the Roar are playing Wellington Phoenix at Sky Stadium. If you're complaining about the kickoff time, get over it.
Time zones, people.
Yeah. Welcome
Just
to
Just enjoy your Easter Sunday chocolate and watch the football. You'll be fine.
Yeah, welcome to following a global sport that's played in different time zones. 10 a.m. kickoff. It feels like it's a must-win for the Raw, but it's also a must-win game for the Knicks, because by the time that game kicks off, depending on the result of Central Coast Sydney FC, the Knicks may need to win to get top spot back on the A-League ladder. So plenty on the line for both of these teams. I'm going to first ask the question, who does this game matter more to, Scott?
It matters to both of them equally. It matters for Brisbane because they can't afford to keep dropping points. If they're a long way, not a long way, but they will be a long way behind Western Sydney and Melbourne City if they don't win this weekend and those two teams do win. And it obviously matters for Wellington in terms of their race for the Premier's plate. That'll come down to when they play Central Coast away from home in round 23. But they want to be in a position where their destiny's in their own hands, where a draw in that game sees them in control, not Central Coast in control. So it matters equally for both. And this is a high-stakes game on Sunday morning, Queensland time.
Adam?
I agree with Scott. I think that both teams are going to go for it. They need the win. And look, I think that's a great thing. Right? It means both teams will be adventurous. You're not going to have the malaise of, you know, that they're playing safe, playing not to lose. At the end of the day, it may still finish a draw, but I think it'll be a draw because both teams are going for it, and that you just can't have a winner. It's almost like neither team may deserve to lose if it is a draw. But I do think Wellington are probably at home. I think are a much stronger proposition than away, but also as well, they've got a number of players coming back from Egypt on All Whites duty as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays effect. Again, that is a long journey back from Egypt down to New Zealand, and they did push this game back from Good Friday to Easter Sunday. I don't even know if that 2 days is going to be enough. So that could also even the playing field for the Raw. But this is, as you said, high stakes for very different reasons at two different parts of the table.
And just to explain why it's high stakes for the Raw, James, you look at the table, they're 3 points behind Melbourne City, who have a game in hand, and they are 5 points behind Western Sydney in sixth place. So Brisbane need to start picking up wins. Yeah, they have a reasonable run home after they play Wellington. It's not too bad the last month. But they need to get themselves in a position where they're closer than that going into that, so they can potentially leapfrog a Western Sydney and a Melbourne City for that sixth spot. Because after MacArthur's win against Brisbane before the international break, them and Melbourne victory look pretty solidly ensconced in the top six now. Certainly, I don't think Brisbane will be catching either of those teams at a 9-point gap to them. So it's trying to catch one of the two Sydney teams, Sydney FC or Western Sydney, and that could be tough to catch Sydney FC, so it's really trying to catch the Wanderers, and Brisbane need to pick up at least 10 points in these last five games, maybe even 12 to 13 to get themselves into the finals, James. Exasperatedly throw your hands in the air, because I think I stole your thunder.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll just let you host the rest of the show.
No, I only host weekends.
All right, well, what I
was... Or emergencies.
Yes, well, what I was about to say was... for starters, just on that point as well, Melbourne City's game in hand is against Central Coast, so I don't think you can just chalk that one up for an automatic 3 points. In fact, I kind of think Central Coast are going to belt the stuffing out of Sydney during the week next week, but that's neither here nor there. I'm actually going to take a slightly different tact to you guys in terms of the setup for this game. I think it's a free hit for the Raw. Quite frankly, Wellington should win this game and win it comfortably. They're the best team in the league so far this season. They've already belted the Raw over in Wellington once this season and are going into this game with the weight of expectations and the pressure of a Premier's plate race. For Brisbane, this is an expected loss. We did this 5 weeks ago when we ran through what we thought of the run home then. And this was a game that I think we all said at the time, it's probably going to be a loss. It's again, a 10 a.m. kickoff for the body clock of the Raw players as well, so I don't know if they're doing anything in training at the moment to try and counteract that, but...
They do train at 10 a.m, don't they? That might almost help them.
It could, but as far as I'm concerned, the big game for them... the big games for them start next weekend, and I think, kind of along the lines of what Adam said, this is a free hit, because they can just go for it now, and any point they get out of this game, whether it's a draw or... somehow a win, it's a bonus for them. So whether that's good enough for them overall, they need, I would say, 10 points to chase down City I would say Western Sydney.
Yep.
But I honestly feel like the Raw's run home, you've got Western Sydney away, that's a make or break game for the season. You win that one and it's game on for the race to the finals. It's Newcastle at home in round 24. Victory away, that's another massive contest, but we do know they can go down there late in the season and win, as we saw last year. And then Adelaide at home, which for me is an expected win. So 10 points, I think Newcastle at home should be a win. Adelaide at home is going to be a win. I'm even going to say Western Sydney away should be a win. And then it's a case of finding a way to get something out of the out of the Wellington away trip or the Victory away trip.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, James. The only thing I'll say is 10 points puts Brisbane on to 36 points. Western Sydney are already on 31. Melbourne City are on 29. So you might even need to get 13 points. That's what I mean. It might be the case where 36 points will put Brisbane playing for finals in the last week, but will it get them in? That's the question that where I'm looking at. Will that actually be enough to get them in? That's the very interesting question, because that's only 5 points of Western Sydney to pick up as well.
Yes, well, just look at Western Sydney's run home, since we're sort of rolling on this theme now, because I think we all feel like Western Sydney is a team that's going to be run down, if anybody, in the current top six. They've got MacArthur this weekend. I'm tipping MacArthur in that one. The Raw, well, let's hope the Raw get a win there, because anything less and it's all a moot point. Sydney, they've got a Sydney derby in round 24.
I think they'll win that. Jeez. They tend to win the derbies at Allianz and then Sydney SC win at Combank, so.
Granted, but based on the runs of form for both of those teams, I feel like you can't discount a Sydney win.
Yep.
They've got City at home, which for them is probably a make or break in terms of the finals as well. And then the final round is Victory away.
Oh, no, that's a tough run. That's probably the toughest run of all the teams who are fighting for finals, but they do have the 5-point head start.
They do, but I don't think they might get into the finals off 5 draws from those 5 games.
Yeah.
All I'm going to add to this is that it comes down to next for the Raw. It comes down to next week. That game against Western Sydney Wanderers. That is elimination final for lack of a better term. Because I think that if Raw don't win that, it's game over as far as finals football goes. I think the equation is simple as that. You're still saying that Wanderers have 5 points to get. Their make or break is going to be that game against the Raw to keep them in it, and then the Derby, and then Melbourne City. So they've got a gauntlet of their own, but I think next week is a big game in context of the places in the top six.
Yeah, and I think Victory can just about secure their finals spot this weekend as well when they host Perth. MacArthur can just about lock everything up for themselves as well this weekend. That would move both of them to 38 points. And
City's the wild card, aren't they? Because their run-in is pretty generous. I know that they've got a game in hand against the Mariners, but their regularly scheduled games are pretty generous aside from the Derby.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like the Raw, as it stands, if I had to pick right now, the Raw are probably going to finish 7th. Maybe 3 points out of finals, just behind Melbourne City. But I think they're more than capable of running down Western Sydney based on the current performances.
I mean, City should have 9 points between Newcastle, Perth and Western United all at home. They've got the 3 bottom teams all at home. They should be winning those. And that's the advantage that they have.
I was going to say, barring a major disaster, they dropped the last 4 games, I think at least we're all finishing the top 8. It's just a matter of, I think that's pretty much a certain, unless they bomb all the games away. But yeah, it's 2 weeks' time. That is the end game as far as the Raw and finals football goes.
Indeed. All right. It is also the final round of the A-League Women's season, and it sounds like the Premier's Plate race is going to be still going based on the result of Sydney-Canberra as we're recording. So my only question for you, who wins the Premier's Plate from here, Adam?
Hang on, let me look at the matchups again. Come back to me.
I'm going to say Melbourne City.
I'm going to say the same thing. What do I always say on this show, James? Never bet against Jeff Hopkins. He needs something out of that game to get his side into the finals, and I can't see him not in the finals. So they're going to get something, and Melbourne City will run down Sydney FC. So it might be a favour from Melbourne Victory to Melbourne City.
And also...
Melbourne City, for me. I think the Perth, even though it's at Macedonia Park, I still think it's a much more winnable game than Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory. I think they'll absolutely kill each other to try and get their objective, and I think there might be a stalemate there. So I think City gets Saloon Passage home, just looking at the run, and I think Perth Glory have pretty much all but given up. I think they're looking for the off season.
And also, I should point out as well, once Melbourne Victory make the finals, they're probably going to go on and win the whole damn thing, as they are want to do. All right. Final game for the Raw Women. They're taking on Canberra, 3 p.m. this Saturday at Perry Park. If you're in Brisbane, get out to that. And one last chance to see the Raw Women.
Teams here, James. Got Brisbane back-to-back wins, Canberra back-to-back wins.
And a chance to see former NPL Queensland player and former Raw player Cannon Clough for Canberra United as well.
Good way to win the season. They played Canberra in the last home game of the regular season 2-3 years ago up at Pine Hills.
They did it.
And that was a high-scoring game, so hopefully we see more of the same. I think Ishinori scored like a 25-yard
Ishinori
bomb.
That's what we'll see.
More of that, please.
I'm pretty sure that was the day we brought Tommy home from the hospital as well.
No, you weren't there. Yeah, we were at James
Drysdale. For that reason. Yeah, I did have a newborn at home that time. Anyway, 3 p.m. this Saturday at Perry Park. Make sure you get out there for that one if you're in Brisbane. The men, 10 a.m. Sunday against Wellington. And that is going to be it for this edition of the Brisbane Football Review. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, and good night.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, and happy Easter to everybody who celebrates.
Yes, enjoy the long weekend. Make sure you're enjoying your Sunday off, because there is no NPL Sunday with no NPL. I was about to just go on autopilot and plug that. But in the meantime,
you would have been there on your own.
All right, yes. Everyone enjoy the long weekend. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week on the Brisbane Football Review. We'll talk to you then.